Andre. Good morning.
Hey. Good morning, Mr. Marmo. How are you doing? Just dialing right now.
Okay, man. Nice to hear your voice.
How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Great.
How about you?
Very good, thank you. Getting
Good.
ready for their heroes.
Andre, good morning.
Good morning, bro. Good morning, Amanda. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Very well.
Great. Great. Great to hear
So, what is on your mind this morning?
that. I have some subjects that I'm having some interaction. I don't know if a part of the international way that we have been doing the business, or the way that we have create the business structure with the clients, that I'm having something strange when I offer the client to be calling them every month. Like, it has happened to already five cases that they tell me, let's not do it every month for many reasons. Let's do it every quarter or every 2 months. Because what I'm receiving on input is, we have been doing this business together for the last 10 years, and we do it every time that you come. And normally we see us in person every 6 months. And the trades, I do it every time that I need to do it. Even one client that he asked me to help him on the decision that the directory of his company is taking. He asked me, let's not do it monthly, let's do it quarterly. They have a strong call every quarter and see how it goes. What do you recommend in that kind of cases?
I would schedule it. Here's what I would do. I would go every other month, okay? And then find an excuse sometime during the month to call them. So for your purposes, you put it on your schedule, okay?
Okay.
And then, but you have a scheduled appointment every other month. How's that sound?
Sounds very good.
Yeah, it's a compromise. Let's just see. And if they seem to enjoy it, then you will be able to go through monthly. It's just so different from what they've known in the past. That's the problem.
And in the future, I think in the couple of next 3 to 6 months, we are gonna be having a Skype available to clients.
Great.
That could help a lot on the interaction because we like with these clients that they are asking, and they did it. They asked me formally, please not, let's not do it actually. His account is managed money. It's nothing, it's not that I'm trading the account or that I need to cause him to do a trade. They pay 1% of all the assets that they have. And what I'm doing, like, with that kind of clients, is that every time, like, that they receive dividends on their account, it goes to their account in Morgan Stanley. Something else that I'm realizing that I'm doing a live, I ask them to tell me, I send them a questionnaire, like a financial plan, but in the international world, you never see that.
Yeah.
Because normally, why they don't see that? Because international clients, they have their money in the States for safety. Originally, they started for safety.
Yep.
They don't want anybody to know what they have and where they have it. But I'm doing that, and I'm realizing that mostly all the information that I'm getting is exactly what I have get on the last 10 years working with them. I know what they are putting there is exactly what I know. Do you have any recommendations how to get more info? It's a 10-page questionnaire, but what I'm getting, I already knew it. Do you have any idea how to get more information out of the client?
Do you think they're not telling you?
No. I feel like they are telling me, but I am doing double the work because I know what they are. They are telling me exactly what they are telling me one day, exactly what they did told me in the last 10 years.
All right. Well, let's work specifically. Let's talk about your largest client that falls into this category. Who is that?
The largest client that follows in this category is, let's talk about, I have one case that it was last Friday talking to him and we said, he's the son of, and he's one of the vice directors of the company. His company worth around $110 million. He has with us 2 million,
yep.
And he received dividends of $150,000 a year. His salary in the company is $70,000. That's total income. He makes $320,000 on dividend plus salary. But his father owns 50% of that company. And his uncle owns the other 50%. And he's a 50-year-old person. He wants to retire. Actually, I'm sorry. He's 57. 47, and he wants to be able to retire when he's 50. But he will not do it because he makes more. He takes care of the foundation of the family. That's what he does, and for that they pay him $10,000. And in the meeting, he asked me, I really like the idea if you can help me with the directory of my company. Let's work on that. I need a lot of help every time that I need to prepare my meetings for the directory, because he's having trouble with some of his cousins that they own the other 50%. But he lives pretty okay. He has basic living for $50,000. He spends $60,000 on traveling a year. He takes his car every 3 or 4 years. He's an $80,000 car, not more than that. He doesn't drive a Ferrari. He owns an apartment here in Miami, and he also owns an apartment in El Salvador. What else?
Pretty
good. Is he in Brazil? No. He's in El Salvador.
Okay. Well, it sounds like, you know, you have other opportunities to develop business with him through managing the foundation or getting the father's or the cousin's money. So there's lots of opportunity here for you. The question is, how can you be of help to him? What about the foundation? Who's managing that?
The foundation of the family, they invest directly. They have two people that they hired there. And I think that they do it locally. they've been in hospitals, and but there's a point, you're right. I think that I can know more from what I know on that foundation.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can help him. If he's on the foundation, he's responsible fiduciary. You can help. I mean, is, would it be okay? Is there anything politically, I mean, would it be legal and everything for the foundation to have you manage it, or is there something that I don't know about?
No, no, no. That would be absolutely, I don't know how much money they have. I don't know how big is the foundation. They used to have accounts in UES, but he used to have 500,000 in with us and 1.5 million in UES, and now he has the 2 million in Morgan Stanley. Could be that he got to UES because his father had an account there. I have never met his father. There's something that I have not tell you. He's from El Salvador. There's normally not many open gay people on the high class families. And this case is he's gay. I think that from there I can do some work also.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think that, you know, obviously there's a lot more, if the family grew to trust you, there's a lot more that you could do for them. And helping him to manage that foundation and give him a second opinion on, you know, monitoring that, I think would be a nice thing to do. And I think it would help them and it would help you. So you can, you know, you don't need to spend a lot of time on it, but twice a year I'd look at it and tell him what you think. You know, just tell him, you know, twice a year I'll be happy to review the portfolio and make sure you're in the right place.
Okay. Okay.
And you can do the same thing with the family's money, you know, with the dad's money. You can say, hey, you know, I'm here to help, and if you'd like a second opinion on how UBS is doing, I'd be happy to help you out there.
Okay.
That might give you a chance to meet the dad and you know, just move forward. We're always trying to give. I mean, you don't have unlimited amounts of time, but in this case, I'd say that there's nobody has total control. So, you know, I think it's still up in the air, and somebody could move in and take over.
Okay. Okay, I like it. Okay, let's start focusing on his dad. They move pretty slow.
You just see why, you know, if you get enough responsibility, then it makes sense to make these calls.
Hmm.
Meaning if you have the opportunity to review the foundation, you just have to talk about every month. Besides, it's 2 million, you know. The 2 million isn't a big account, but it's a nice account. But what you want is to have conversations about other things in his life. And other places where you might be able to help. So that's what I would do in this case. Give me another case.
$8 million account.
Yeah.
To three brothers and a mom. The brothers, they don't take care. Only one brother is the one that takes care of everything, the older one. And he's in, right now he's part of 7 directories. He's full-time general manager of the family company. He has one account with Morgan Stanley and one account with Wells Fargo on more or less the same size. And also he's part of one of the directories is from a cemetery, and on the cemetery they hold some money with some Banco Santander, and they receive quarterly visits from Banco Santander from three people to present what is the target. The account there is much bigger. He's telling me more or less, never necessarily the exact number, but more or less it looks like it's going to be between $35 and $40 million in Santander. That money is from the cemetery. And the cemetery, he only owns 10% of that.
Mm-hmm.
And he also asked me, let's do this every time that we have really good relations. He's my same age. He invited me to his birthday in El Salvador. I flew with my wife to that event. Every time that they are here in Miami, we go and have dinner together. With me, my wife, his wife, and him. We are friends. And he told me, let's do this course, but let's do it quarterly. Not monthly, because actually I don't have much time to take care of this account. I know it's important, but it's only 1/4 of this money of the $8 million. It's mine. It's more family money that it will run a long time.
Okay, so what do you think you might do with this guy?
I think that I have done everything that it's in my mind. If you have some recommendations, I would love to hear it.
Well, clearly you could get the other $35 million and the other $8 million from Wells Fargo, right?
No, I cannot, because there's a trust, and the money from Santander is from the cemetery. And the cemetery is ruled by another family who runs everything through Santander. He only goes there as the owner of the 10% of the cemetery, but not being part of the decisions where to keep the money. We have talked about that. And he told me that he has said twice that week that they can diversify the money from the cemetery in 2 or 3 banks instead of having it only with one. But the control family, the one that owns 51% of the cemetery, they decided they prefer to have it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But we can, it's never too late to continue trying.
Right. So one of the things you could do would be to do the same thing. Look, you don't have unlimited amounts of time, but to do semi-annually a review of their performance versus indexes and performance versus other things, a legitimate review, you know, would be worth it.
What do you mean with legitimate review?
I mean, you don't want to, I mean, let's say that you hired me and paid me $10,000 a year to view the performance of that accounts, right? And I had no vested interest in moving it to anywhere else, or I just would tell you whether or not the money was being properly managed. They were taking the appropriate amount of risk, and they were getting the appropriate amount of return for that risk. Okay? And so I could do a good job of reviewing their performance. That's all I need. I mean, as a consultant, I have no vested interest in moving it anywhere, but I could tell you if they're underperforming or outperforming, whether they're doing a good job or a bad job. And that's what you can do. And the same thing is true with Wells Fargo. you know, it's hard to review something without, you know, when you have a vested interest, because you're always going to be looking for something wrong. But try as a fiduciary to look at it and say, you know, I'm not moving the money to me. I'm just looking at it as a disinterested third party. Is this company doing a good job or not? Okay? So I think that's a fair thing to do for these people. You could even offer to charge them a fee. You're allowed to do that, I think. Charge a fee for reviewing portfolio, giving out consulting time. You might look into that. I mean, you could just pay $10,000 to tell them whether they're doing well or not.
Maybe you didn't know that. But I will check if I'm allowed to do that.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that it's called consulting services. I think Morgan Stanley? You think? Yeah, it's Morgan Stanley that allows you to do it. You may have to have a designation for that. But Greystone does a lot of that. You've got a subsidiary called Greystone.
Yes.
And they do a lot of that. They do a lot of consulting where they don't actually receive commissions, they just charge a fee.
Okay. I will check that. Yeah. Even if we don't have the assets, just consulting.
Right, you don't have the assets. You're just a consultant. You're just a consultant on the account.
Okay. I will check that. My problem with that account with Wells Fargo, and the reason why we don't have that account here, is because the same person that managed the money in Wells Fargo is the one that used to manage of the grandfather of my client. And he doesn't want to take the money out of her.
Well, how old is she?
She told me that he's old, but I don't know her age, but she has a team. She has been pretty smart on that, and she has been putting layers. I think that she was with somebody that is on his 30s, and the other one that is on his 50s.
Yeah, well, the loyalty is to her, not to them, okay? Okay.
I will. And would you recommend to catch his attention for on his personal account? Because I will check his consulting group for the cemetery works. I can prepare a presentation, send it to them, and he can pass it. And I know that he will do it. He will pass it through to the people, to the family in charge of the cemetery. But. And with that presentation, try to get a meeting. And on the meeting, do what I do. But on his personal account, he doesn't feel like that account needs more time. Especially because he owns only 20% of that.
Well, he's million. I mean, that's his money, right? Or no?
That is family money. It's his mom and his brothers and him. It's $8 million that it belongs to everybody. And he doesn't. He's very strategic. He's not tactic. He doesn't want to assume any risk. He prefers to make less money, but. Don't assume risk that can have trouble with the family.
Right. He's still responsible.
Yes.
Okay, so you should definitely help him review that and see how he's doing. Because you can get a lot of trouble for underperforming. You think, well, I'll just take much less risk. Well, then you may underperform. That's as bad as taking too much risk. can't take the risk out of responsibility. He's responsible. He should do a good job. Not trying to be too safe or too risky. He should be, you know, reasonable. And you can help him by reviewing that and make sure that he's being reasonable, not taking too little risk, which then he way underperforms for years, and then, frankly, he's liable then to be way underperforms.
Okay. Okay.
He says, well, I'll put it in the money market fund and I'll never be sued. Well, that's not a fiduciary responsibility. See, that's not doing the right thing. You've got a very good expanding economy and you should be taking advantage of that. It's like deciding whether or not you should rent or own, right? There's always more risk when you own, but over 20 or 30 or 40 years, you're going to be much better if you own. So, you know, you can take less risk and never own a home, but that would be stupid.
Agreed.
Okay.
I will tell you something. That is reality. What you just said is with something that I deal every day. I will tell you a story of some clients in the country that I work on. They have their total net worth is around, I'm talking one special case. He worth like 15 or 16 million. He's on his 52. He has never owned a house because everything that he has seen is that his grandparents and their parents have to escape of the country. He doesn't trust the country. That way he doesn't own a house there.
But he owns a house in Miami, probably.
No, he doesn't. He has all his life he has rent.
That's an irrational approach. To real estate ownership, like people have irrational approaches to stocks.
Agreed.
You know people that have never owned a stock, right?
Agreed.
They just think it's too risky, so they put everything in bonds or CDs. It's okay. I mean, they're just not risk takers. They just can't sleep, you know? So that's highly unusual, especially for somebody that has a lot of money because they're taking, unless they inherited the money, they are taking risk every day.
In their business. No, but that was a line because I agree with you that always you have to, if you are thinking of 30 years, 20 years, or 15 plus, always own, not rent. In the States. If you go to somewhere else, it's a different story.
No, I understand. You got political risk.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. I have another case that is the other side. When I told her that we can do monthly conference calls, she asked me why I can call you twice a month. And I was like, how can I tell her that twice a month is not necessary, especially the way we are doing managed money? And I don't want to be rude. She can call me anytime that she wants, but she's paying for that. But I want to do it on a polite and correct way to tell her that it's not necessary. What would you do in that case?
I tell her that we have a scheduled appointment every month. We're going to have an agenda, an executive summary. And that's what I tell her.
Actually, you told me, and I told her exactly the same, but, and she told me, why can't we do it? Why we cannot do it twice?
Can you simply sell it? Because I have no time for that.
Okay. Okay, I didn't want to talk to that because I told her was that's the reason why she has a folder. That's the reason why she put the every note that she will hold for the first 15 days of the month. She will do it for the 30 days of the month. And they are starting this business. She is a new client. That why I told her that it's not necessary. But I just wanted to ask you.
Right. I would just tell her that, you know, like boards of directors, a monthly meeting is appropriate. If there's a crisis, I'll call you in between.
Mm.
Okay? So you just, schedule the appointment. Yeah.
What do you recommend about, let's talk about crisis. My book is not a big part is like 50% is transactional. Even if they have managed money, all the clients are always, I'm talking about 10 years, 15 years, this money is not for them, it's for the long run, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Normally, in volatility, where volatility, like the one in February, I think that we receive 1-2 phone calls at the most, between WhatsApp and phone calls. Nobody else sent an email yet. But I think that we are close in 2019 or even 2020. We will have a stock sale off and around, it should be around 10 and 20%. Somewhere in the next 2-3 years. How do you think that I should prepare for that? Because it's coming. Suddenly, it could be sooner or later, but it's going to happen. It's normal.
Absolutely. It's like a, they say it's like a bullet that's coming to the back of your head. You won't see it coming.
Okay. I like the analogy. But how would you prepare the client in this monthly call? I can put a line because I really feel that it's coming. How can I put a smooth line not to get them scared, not to get them scared that they're not going to bring more money, but tell them that we have the resources to help them be ready for that downside.
Okay, so recessions last an average of 12 to 24 months, typically. Expansions last 4 to 6 years. Okay? Because the Federal Reserve and because the last recession was so bad, the recovery was so slow, we took a 4 to 6 year recovery and we've extended it into a 8 to 12 year recovery, okay? Just took longer. And you've got a revolution going on right now in technology. Just like the Industrial Revolution changed things, this revolution, the technology revolution, is changing the world. You've got artificial intelligence and robotics which are going to escalate things dramatically. Okay? So, it isn't a typical business cycle. So we don't know how long this business cycle will last. Nor do we know when the next recession will come, but what's happening is everything is happening on an ever-increasing speed, and change will be breathtaking, okay? Meaning it will take the breath away of most people. They will not be able to cope with some of the fast changes that will happen in the next 5 to 10 years. So that's more of the crisis that I see coming. Then I do an economic crisis. I see a crisis of change, of speed of change. So that's what you really have to get people ready for. And that as business people, they need to be ready for, you know, competition that's going to come from nowhere and all of a sudden try and disrupt them. And so they need to be on the cutting edge of change. So to me, that's what we're talking. That's why monthly is important, because change is going to happen so fast. Just watch what happens with these driverless cars. And why that's going to be, it's going to be so logical that people will accept it, and pretty soon there'll be virtually no driving except for sports driving. You know, they'll be driving for fun, but they won't be driving for business. Why would you drive if you just sit and read the paper while you commuted to work? So logically speaking, the world is going to change very fast, and therefore your clients can't hide. They can't get in safety. I mean, what's safety mean? You know, they need to own the change. And if they don't own the change, then they're going to be part of the disruption. Okay? You understand?
Yes.
Okay. So I think that's part of, subscribe, there's a magazine called MIT. The university, MIT.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own magazine. Subscribe to that and read it every week. It's, maybe it's monthly, I forget, but I try and keep up with it. But it's just amazing what's happening in terms of the speed of change. I mean, mapping the human genome changed the world in terms of medicine. The rate of development of new drugs based on the human genome, you're going to be having drugs that are going to be customized for you, not for anybody else. That sounds crazy, but they are going to be able to do that. You know, you need to own some of these companies. You don't need to own them all, but you need to own some of them. So you can't just hide in, you know, sky old stocks and sky old bonds. It's not going to be the world. That's not going to be the new world. So I think that there's the rate of change is going to be the big new problem. And I think it's going to disrupt jobs. I think the disparity between the rich and the poor is going to get greater. Those that own equities are going to become very wealthy, and those that don't aren't, and so they're going to be quite left behind. So, you know, you need to have an opinion like that. You need to have a strong opinion about what the future looks like. Now, you can get it from your firm. You can get it from your own research. But you need to have an opinion. You need to be a thought leader. And when you go in to talk to people of your guy with 8 million, it isn't just business as usual. This isn't, the world is not business as usual. You don't have to look very far to discover that. I mean, every industry is being disrupted right now. The automobile industry, the hotel, motel business. Every business you look at is being turned upside down, including our business. Okay.
You're right. Actually, you're right. The magazine that you said that you told me to subscribe is called, I'm seeing here on the MIT faculty newspaper, they have like 100 magazines. Which one is the...
It's MIT Technology, it's a magazine. I subscribe to it because I'm a I'm an artificial intelligence and robotics aficionado. I'm really interested in that business. And I've always been interested in biotechnology and the future of medicine and developing the drugs. And so I do my own, I've always asked portfolio managers, give me the 5 best drug stocks you own. In biotechnology stocks and the 5 best robotics and artificial intelligence stocks. And so I like to do this. And over time, I've probably outperformed the market. But it's kind of a hobby for me. But I think that you can be an expert on this without having to pick the stocks.
I like it.
You only have to look at New Economy Funds, American Funds, New Perspective Funds, technology funds, and see just how, over time, how they've done. I mean, they've killed everybody. So, that's not going to change. That's going to get, now they're talking about, the fangs and all that being extended and growth stocks being extended, and we just need to buy value stocks today. Well, that's true. Except what is a value stock? It's a stock that is cheap and you hope it turns around, right? So you have to know the story there of why it's going to turn around. The question is, I'll buy a few of those, but I don't want to own stocks. I don't want to own utilities and boring things that are going to never return the kind of return that equities are supposed to return for me. I want to at least give myself a chance. If I'm going to be in the market, I want to get a decent rate of return. If I don't want to be in the market, I'll be in cash. So I think that's what you can do for people. You can hold cash, and then when the market sell off, you can buy. Over a 20-year period, moving from cash to stocks, back to cash. Then when things are high, you raise cash. When things are low, you buy. Most people do not have the guts to do that, and therefore they lose out on, let's say, 2% a year total return that you can add back in there. I think it's too many. I think that's a lot. So that's what you do. That's how you prepare for a crisis.
Okay.
Bonds are going to be a poor investment for the next 5 years, probably 10 years. But cash is always good. So you've got to have an opinion. Having a strong opinion, you might be wrong, okay? But most people want to hear that you have strong conviction. So gain a strong opinion, back it up with facts, and be able to tell a good story. And then have the investments behind it that make it a compelling story. Because that's the business we're in. We're in the business of managing risk. Okay, but that doesn't mean taking no risk. Or having or accepting poor returns. I mean, who the hell wants to own a baseball team that has a losing record every year?
Right?
You don't have to do poorly. I'm shocked at how people just accept poor return under the premise that they're not taking the same amount of risk. I just think they're bad managers.
I like it.
it's a win. It's a winning mentality. Why should we be average? Why do you want to be average? What is that? Who wants to be average? I want to win. I have the people who want to win. They've been around. They have a lot of experience. They have knowledge. Anybody can chase the benchmark. Anybody can get average returns. I mean, just think about it. If you raise cash, right, and then had 20% cash, and the market sells off, you put the whole thing to work. Boom. Yeah, you might be wrong. It might go down a little further. But over time, it'll come back, and you'll have done very well. And you do that every time. Makes sense. Even 10% cash. It means that you're doing something. You're doing the opposite of what everybody else is doing. You're buying when they're selling, and you're selling when they're buying. And that's as simple a management tool as you can use. So what do you do in a crisis? You buy. Just like Warren Buffett. You're the guy with the cash when everybody else is out of money.
Perfect.
Makes sense? Not hard.
Makes sense. Yeah, I don't know if it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense. We're gonna try to do my best on that subject. That subject I have tried many times to hold cash and buy when the market is down. I did the example in 2008, but it gave me so much stress every night that I went to sleep. Say, this is the lowest, this is the lowest, this is the lowest, and I bought. Actually, I play a lot with the cash, but I try to manage with the Citigroup stock. When I was looking, I used to hold it at 50, then I bought it at 40, that was 20% down, then I bought it at 30, that was almost half the price, then I bought it at 20, and after that I thought, we're done. I was lucky on TV. After 20, I thought my last buy is going to be 15. Because lower than 15, we're out. There's no more back. And actually, I didn't buy lower than 10. Even the 97 cents, I didn't do it. Because we are humans.
Right, but you can't be human. You got to be a robot.
That's why I like this company. This company, it's giving these great tools about... Actually, I was having lunch last Friday with an expert on that. He's creating the new technology, actually, even the one that Morgan Stanley is using. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing the way that our business will move in the next 10 to 15 years. It will be.
I'd love to hear about it. We don't have time today, but hold that thought. Tell me that story the next time we talk.
Okay, I will. I will tell you.
Meanwhile, you know, have a philosophy, okay? Have a philosophy of we're going to raise cash, you know, when everyone is jumping in the streets and happy. And when there's blood in the streets, we're going to invest. So what does that mean? Down 10%? Down 20%? But we're not going into a recession. So you can do this raising cash and buying pretty well. And so if your clients are interested in, you know, having you be more active, that as a money manager, that's the only thing you can really do. Right? That's it. Asset allocate. That's all you can do. You're not buying individual stocks and doing a bunch of stock transactions. So what can you do? Raise cash? So think about it. That's your only responsibility. You can do that. Raise cash and invest the money. Raise cash, invest the money. So you don't need to, you know, it's not any more complicated than that. You can, you know, that can be your reality. Okay,
sounds perfect. What a good talk today. Very, very good.
Well, our conversations are going to be a little different. Okay, we've got to kind of we're going to peel this back. So you keep having conversations with your clients, you and I'll keep talking. I think we're going to come up with something very concrete and something very good here.
Perfect. Perfect. I appreciate this call, Rob. Thanks for your time. And let's keep this rolling.
Terrific. Andres, thank you very much. Have a wonderful week.
You too, Rob. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.